Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends, the number one worldwide radio show. The show's outrageous and it's contagious. It will lift your spirits high, you'll feel that you can fly. Transform your attitude, fill it with gratitude. Cut loose and improvise, it's coaching time today. Joyce is a great coach with an extraordinary approach. Fast on the upbeat, top of the heap. A wild motivator, great stimulator. Unstoppable in a humoristic way. Life lessons with passion, joyfully today. You want Joyce as your coach if you want this to be your best year ever.
I certainly want this to be your best year ever. I want this to be my best year ever. Coach Joyce here, wanting this to be the best year ever for all our friends worldwide.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends. We are broadcasting live across America and around the world. This is the Hour to Empower, with stimulating talk, views you can use, memorable quotes, and powerful life lessons. We always have hot guests and cool topics. We even have cool guests and hot topics. You always want to tune us on, tune in, and tune up with us to hear the best of the best. You do not want to miss any of our shows. Each show goes into our archives. Log into JoyceBarryandFriends.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and you will see each guest and each topic on our homepage. You can play and download any of our shows, always informative, inspiring, and motivational. You want to share these special shows with your friends, family, and contacts. You can follow us on Facebook and become a Joyce Barry subscriber and even a fan by going to our Joyce Barry and Friends fan page. Be sure to check like. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us by going to our Blog Talk Radio homepage and clicking follow right below my picture. You can also message me in any of these venues about our show, about our guests, about anything. My official website is JoyceBarry.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E. The chat room is open. Log into the chat room, have fun, and chat away. I go back and forth into the chat room during the show to see what is going on in there. Motivation, inspiration, and an education. Positive, happy thoughts to improve your life, health, and finances. Take positive actions to create a gratifying lifestyle. Life lessons from me, your host, Joyce Barry, straight from the Coach's Corner, and then you will hear from our wonderful guest today. Folks, every day should be treated like a special day. We wish you the finest of friends, the opulence of opportunities, the magic of miracles, and the happiest of days. May this year be your best year ever.
Truly your best year ever. Folks, for those of you who follow the show, for those of you who know anything about me or in my world, whether business, friendship, personal, family, you know that I've been off the air for 4 months, literally. I wasn't sick at all. Those of you that heard me on air, everything was fine in my world, and I went in and to a hospital to take a biopsy. They had seen something on my lungs, so I just went in for a biopsy, and with that test, out of that test, my blood pressure went to 230. Repeat, 230. For those of you that know anything about blood pressure, it's truly way, 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 way above the normal range. I was admitted immediately to Good Sam Hospital, the intensive care unit, where I remained for over 2 weeks. I was living on a ventilator with pipes down my throat so I could breathe. Then I was admitted to acute care in the hospital, and from there, over 2 weeks later, by ambulance to Morse Life, which is a very popular rehab center in Florida, and I literally was there for over 3 months. So I'm only home about a month or so, just getting myself together and getting ready to do this show with you today. So what I wanted to say was this experience, literally, I've been through hell, working very hard to find my way back. And the thing that really put me in a state of fear is to this day, the doctors, the surgeons have no idea why this happened to me. 50 pages of reports, tests, they don't know why it happened. And the fear is that of, if it happened and I don't know why, what can I do to prevent it and know in my heart and soul it's not going to happen again? So planning to do this show today, I thought of every guest, every contact that I know who I wanted to be on the show on my first show back. And there was no hesitation, no doubt whatsoever that I wanted Dr. Bernard Siegel, or Bernie, as he prefers to be called. He needs no introduction. He has touched so many lives all over the world. In 78, he reached a national and then international audience when he began talking about patient empowerment and the choice to live fully and die in peace. As a physician who has cared for and counseled innumerable people whose mortality has been threatened by illness, Bernie embraces a philosophy of living and dying that stands at the forefront of the medical ethics and spiritual issues our society grapples with today. In May 2011, Bernie was honored by the Watkins Review of London, England, as one of the top 20 spiritually influential living people on the planet. He continues to break new ground in the field of healing, supporting changes in medical education to humanize medical practice. Today, we will focus on one of his extraordinary books, and he has many, the one today on peace, love, and healing. I focus on those things because without peace, it's really tough to just survive. And love is something that keeps you happy and you can transcend to others. And it is all about healing and living a happier and healthier life. Without further ado, my honor, my extreme pleasure to bring to you Dr. Bernie Siegel. Welcome, Bernie. Thank you so much for having this work out today.
Thank you, Joyce. You put me in a trance with the introduction. I'm feeling so peaceful now, it's hard to talk. But, you know, I used to sign my letters. Now we have emails, so you don't type in all. But I used to sign all my letters, peace, love, and healing, because that's what I wished for people. And then I began to limit it to peace, because if you're at peace, the other things can happen. And again, it comes from within. You know, I do a lot of reading of spiritual books and stories. That's really the key. The theme that you keep finding over and over again is about finding that peace, that when you have faith, then you're not afraid of what the world will bring you because you have faith in yourself as well as any other sources that exist in your life. And so whatever you encounter, you believe in. I was reading one story where this man is having all kinds of troubles. And, you know, he keeps talking to God and says, God, will you please answer me? And ultimately he realizes God is answering him. And, you know, too often what people want is their answer, if you know what I mean. It's like telling God what to do. And I loved it being compared to a woman in labor. If you're premature labor, doctors come in to help stop it so you can have a child at full term. But if you're full term and go into labor, then it's time for you to deliver. And the doctor doesn't try to stop it. And in a sense, they were saying that's how God responds. There are times you need to give birth to yourself and the future and make decisions and do things. And there are other times where your prayer may be answered in the sense of God accomplishing something and having something happen for you. Because I use the term spiritual flat tires, that you may be upset when you get a flat tire. See, oh, I'll miss my meeting, I'll miss my plane, I'll miss this, I'll miss that. But what if you found that the plane you missed crashed, or the building you were going to burned down, you know, or collapsed in an earthquake or whatever? You'd say, wow, thank God I got a flat tire. And I grew up with that from my parents, you know, that when you had decisions, you did what made you happy. When you had a problem, God was redirecting you. And the more I talk to spiritual figures, you know, of modern times, their parents were the same. Norman Vincent Peale is a good friend of mine, and he said his mother would say, Norman, if God slams one door, further down the corridor, another is open. And there are songs which tell you to keep going, you may find the window, you know. And so, again, it wasn't impressing neighbors, having, an expensive car or a big house. It was using material things to make the world better for everyone and using your difficulties as what I call a labor pain of life to redirect you to give birth to yourself. As a matter of fact, one woman compared her disease. See, think of what you just went through. She compared her disease to a pregnancy. She said, you know, with all the treatments and things she was going through, I watched my body change. Tired, I sit staring out at life. And it goes on and on. But the first half of the poem ends with, 9 months finally pass, I give birth to my child. All the discomfort and pain is now justified. The second paragraph of the poem is, 12 months finally pass, I give birth to myself. All the discomfort and pain is now justified. And others have compared themselves to blank canvases. I was an artist as a child and an adult. I mean, it was my way of really getting into a creative trance and healing myself and finding peace. You know, you talk about it. I could come home after a difficult day at the hospital, paint a portrait of one of our pets or children, and in an hour or two, I was a different person creating. And the same effect in an operating room. While I was doing something for that person, I was in that same kind of creative trance state. But if you think of yourself as that blank canvas, you don't get upset with it. You rework it. You know, as again, another patient said, the canvas is not finished. There's more color on the palette. So when you're painting, you don't say, oh, it doesn't look like my dog. It doesn't look like my kid. So I'll throw it away. No, you don't throw it away. You redo it. You retouch it. You look. You see the truth, then you can portray it. And I would say to people, always consider yourself a work in progress. So you're not judging yourself. You're continually undergoing change. I call
Bernie,
it rehearsing.
Bernie, given what
I've
been through, I have many, many questions for you.
Go ahead.
I know you retired from surgery in 89, but you never, ever retired from making a difference in people's
right.
lives. What is it you tell people to get past the fear? The reason I'm in that state is because the doctors never discovered why this thing was brought on to me that kept me for 4 months out of commission. Is that a common thing, as far as you know, from your years as a doctor, or is that par for the course a lot of the times?
Well, if fear, see, you create fear. I may add, I don't know if they've checked your genes, but maybe you have some genetic aberration that reacted, you know, to one of their drugs or things they did that it wouldn't have happened to somebody else. So tell them to check on that. But fear is, again, like imagery, like a meditation, but it's a negative one. See, what you're picturing is what could happen. That's why
right.
I work with drawings all the time. Draw yourself in the operating room. It's an empty black box. You're lying there all alone. And somebody else draws it being embraced by the surgeon, love God, flowers are growing. I don't worry about that person. Nurses used to say to me, your patients are refusing pain medication. I said, did it ever occur to you that they're not hurting? These are people who had major surgery, but saw
wow.
it as their way of being healed, so they didn't have any problems. So again, when you picture the worst, yeah, you're setting yourself up for trouble. You're changing your body chemistry, so all those things happen. But you see, that person who drew the black box, I said to her, either don't have surgery or change your attitude. She said, no, I do want to go ahead. I said, all right. Then 5-6 times a day, picture going to the hospital, having surgery, and everything going beautifully. A week later, she came in with a drawing that's gorgeous. The room is filled with caring physicians. God's light is shining through a window in the operating room. Her family is all around waiting for her. I mean, I don't worry about her now. Go ahead. Because she's in a different place. And people have to realize the mind is really all-powerful in what it can create. See, there are people who think they're being treated, and I don't make up any of these stories. When medical errors have been made in the radiation machine, there's no radioactive material, the chemotherapy isn't put in to the solution, and yet these people had tumors shrinking and side effects of the treatments they thought they were getting. Now, I heard these stories because the doctors were upset and came to me for help to deal with their guilt and what they were going through. But I said, you have to understand, you're not stupid. You didn't know it because the patients all acted as if they were. And believe me, some of those doctors looked like they were going to faint. It never occurred to them how powerful the minds of the patients were, and that's why they didn't know it. And on the other hand, I know people who have those treatments and no side effects at all. So one doctor thought the radiation machine was broken. He said, until I saw your name in the chart, then I knew it was a crazy patient. And that woman just said, I get out of the way and I let it go to my tumor. See, that was radiation. I get out of the way, I let it go to my tumor. So she had no side effects of the treatment at all. And again, even, you see, fear is a necessary feeling. It's to protect you, though. If you and I go for a walk in the woods and you see what looks like a snake and you leap back, that's fear helping you, see? But I always say, if every stick on the ground becomes a poisonous snake, you're going to be a wreck by the time you get home. And so we have to really realize, what is there to fear? Let me think about that. What am I fearing? Look at it specifically, and you realize if it happens, oh, I can do this, I'll do that. You know, you have choices. You're not helpless. And to understand that. And the other is even mechanical things like laughing. If you're laughing, you can't be afraid. A woman patient of mine is wheeled into the operating room. She was a total wreck. I spent an hour trying to calm her down because I was afraid if I brought her in, she'll have some cardiac problems. She's so anxious. But it was hopeless, so I wheeled her in the operating room. She looked around and said, thank God, all these wonderful people are going to take care of me. And I thought to myself, I agree with her. What the hell's that going to accomplish? She's saying it to make herself feel better. So I said to her, I've worked with these people for years. They are not wonderful people. Well, the whole operating room burst out laughing because the staff knows, you know, Crazy Siegel, and he says these things. And the woman, you see, starts laughing, and in 2 minutes we were family, and her fear was gone. So laugh for no reason every few hours. You'll find it very hard to be afraid. I mean that. Or think, what am I grateful
for? Do you believe that
for?
Meditation has a positive effect on fear?
Yeah, absolutely. But again, you got to be meditating, you know, in to find the peace and the tranquility within you. See, the theme I talk about that's in myths, fairy tales, and religions, the still pond. Until the pond is still, you can't see the truth because there's turbulence in your life. Even a lawyer said, while learning to think, I almost forgot how to feel. See, he's so busy thinking what to do and all the things to worry about. But the ugly duckling, where does he find out he's a swan on a pond? See, he isn't fearful. He isn't cursing his mother who threw him out of the house. And the tiger whose mother dies giving birth is brought up by goats. He doesn't know he's a tiger until a tiger shows up, says to him, hey, stupid, come with me. But where does he take him? Joseph Campbell shared this in a story. He says he takes him to a still pond and says, look, you're a tiger. And you see, Campbell goes on to say just what you said. The stillness, the pond, it's like meditation. It's a quiet mind. You're not filled with fear, and then the truth is apparent to you.
When you say about the truth being apparent, I've been searching and searching because I know what happened to me is to bring me to another level. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Yeah. I haven't had that aha moment yet. I know meditation is one of the possibilities of getting there. Are there any other ways?
Well, that's why I talk about the dreams and the drawings. Consciousness communicates in symbols. People will think I'm psychotic, but I hear voices too, telling me to do things, ask certain questions, go places. It's amazing. But again, I found it happening when I was quiet. In other words, taking a walk, jogging, riding a bike, doing some repetitive exercise out in nature, and I'd hear a voice say, go to the animal shelter. How did your parents meet? I mean, these are some of the things that you'd say, where's that coming from? But I would always follow what that voice said because I knew it was guiding me. So again, back to the quiet mind and the voice. And the other is to pay attention to your dreams, to do a little meditation when you get into bed, to quiet your mind, and then see what comes up in the dream. And believe me, if it's really
symbolic. How do you pay attention to your dreams if, like me, I have very clear dreams and the second I wake up, I can't remember any of it? I really can't.
Yeah, some of them are not that important because I notice that with myself. I mean, sometimes it's like going to a movie, if you know what I mean. I wake up and I can't remember all of it. But when something meaningful happens in the dream, I wake up and it's in my mind. And again, you can write a note. Keep a pad and a pencil next to your bed. So if you wake up, make a note. Write it down.
Literally I wake up, I can't remember. And this is over a period of years. It isn't just isolated dreams. I really want to. Is there any technique to recall that dream?
Yeah, what I found was the more I meditated and did imagery, guided imagery, you know, picturing things, I was letting my consciousness know I'm open to this stuff. I want to be aware. You see, because a part of your intellect, you can have a dream and your intellect may say, I don't want to upset, you know, Joyce. I'll block that out. She won't wake up and remember it. But if you start letting your consciousness know, I do want these messages. I want them to come. I want them to be clear. I want them to guide me. You'll find that things really begin to improve. And the important ones start coming through when you wake up with those images and memories. And the other, as I said, is you can draw a picture. Draw outdoor scenes. You'd be amazed at what creeps in unconsciously. Or if you said, I'll draw my home and family, I'll draw myself at work, I'll draw myself moving, taking a different job, whatever. Different symbols will come out, and you'll see which is the right thing. And then the more you get into that, as I say, the more the dreams will begin to provide you with information when there's something significant. I mean, I've had some dreams that I always remember. In one, there was a cat. And I thought it was an iridescent cat, just sparkling. I thought his name was Diamond, but nobody pronounced the D at the end of it. So in seeing James Hillman, a Jungian therapist who happens to live in Connecticut, and I went up to him with a bunch of problems. And he said, Bernie, it's Diamond, D-A-I-M-O-N. You know, it's your inner spirit. that you have to connect with. And he was so wonderful. Even let me just say in another simple terms, this had to do with a past life experience. I was talking to him saying, my Lord asked me to kill, and he said, Bernie, stop. Are you listening to what you're saying? I said, what do you mean? He said, you keep talking about your Lord. I said, yeah, it's the Lord of the castle, and he's telling me to do things. I said, and he said, Bernie, it's not that Lord. It's your Lord. And boy, did that become a very different situation when suddenly it's the Lord speaking to me the way God did to Abraham, or what Jesus went through. So again, it's you know, you could find people who can help you interpret those dreams too. But I'd say the more you open your mind, and I mean that literally, unlock it, you know, take the lid off is another term I use, then all this will start coming forth. And don't get upset with yourself. Oh, I can't remember that dream. It's still having meaning to you. When I started working with cancer patients, I had a dream. I'm in a car full of people, not driving, and the car went off a cliff. And we're all going to get killed. And they're all screaming and howling and yelling, and I'm sitting there peacefully, just okay. And they looked at me, you know, the other people in the car are like, what the hell's wrong with you? How can you sit there and not? And I realize it's because I'm not afraid of death. You know, because one of the things I needed an answer to was, do you start support groups, see, for people with cancer and AIDS and other things to prove that you won't die? See, they have the disease, you don't. Like a doctor sitting behind the desk rather than what I did in my office, put the desk against the wall so I wasn't separated from people. But what that dream taught me is, no, you're not doing this because you're afraid of death. You don't have a fear of death. That is not your issue. You're trying to help people. And so, again, dreams like that will come up and will answer your questions. And you can even say to your unconscious, hey, I'd like a dream tonight to help me make a decision or to understand why I got sick or what's that to mean. And don't be afraid to ask and be open to it.
I like that advice because I do believe in symbols. I'm always looking up in the heaven for images, and I make it's kind of like I see my dogs that pass in their image in the heavens, and mm-hmm. I'm always looking around me, like a white pigeon comes towards me, what is the message? So I do believe in everything you're saying. Did you, doctor, ever have a near-death experience?
Yes, ma'am. I had it when it wasn't a problem. There were carpenters in our house. I was 4 years old. And in those days, you didn't have all the automatic tools. So I was watching them put nails in their mouth, then take them out and bang, 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 you know, fix things. And I'm sitting on my bed in the bedroom, and I had a toy telephone, which was not made well for children, because I unscrewed the dial and put the pieces in my mouth. And I aspirated them, and I was choking to death.
Oh, my God.
It was one of the most painful things I have ever experienced and never forgotten the pain, because you can't breathe.
Right.
Your diaphragm is sucking, your ribs, you know, the intercostal muscles, they're pulling as hard as they can. You know, it's like a vacuum cleaner that's blocked, and no air is coming in. And then a wonderful thing happened. I'm suddenly free of pain. And I realized, you're not in the body anymore. You know, that was another interesting thing. Even as a four-year-old, I realized I'm not that kid. I'm the consciousness. I left the body. That kid's dying now. But I was so thrilled to be out of my body. What an interesting experience for a four-year-old. I thought, wow, this is wonderful. I'm sorry my parents will find me dead, but I want to be dead. This is much more interesting than being in that body and being a kid. And then,
was anybody in the room at the time and witnessed what you were going through?
No, I was alone in my bedroom. Yeah. My mother was pregnant with my sister in the kitchen. I mean, I had no way of calling out because my larynx
right.
is shut down.
But weren't the
completely.
Carpenters there working on things you
but
referenced?
But they're in other parts of the house. Yeah, nobody was
with
me.
Oh.
So then something fascinating. See, because I was thinking of God, and, you know, this is where I'm going, and on. Then the kid on the bed had a seizure and vomited. And when I thought about it later, it's like I had an angel who did a Heimlich maneuver on him. See, now, due to the seizure and convulsions, he's vomiting, and the pressure is now coming up and out, not in. And so all these pieces came flying loose, and he took a breath, and I call it feeling like a vacuum cleaner. I was sucked right back into his body, and I was mad as hell. The first words out of my mouth, I remember sitting up, looking up, and yelling, "Who did this?" Because I chose to be dead. Who the hell, you know, did this, and I'm not dead? And then I thought, oh, there's a God, and God has a schedule for everybody, and it's not your scheduled time. I mean, I know this sounds crazy, but this is a four-year-old thinking, and that has never been forgotten by me. I can't say that it changed my life. You know, when you're 4 years old, see, I thought it was a perfectly natural, normal thing that everybody went through. When my mother came into the room hearing the vomiting and, you know, the seizure and all, I didn't say to her, "Hey, Ma, I had a wonderful experience. We have to write a book about it, near death."
Right.
I mean,
right.
I thought this is something everybody understood and went through. So it's no big deal. You know, that's what happens when you die. So I didn't discuss it or make it a big issue because I didn't think it was a big issue. It was what happened. And but it left me with a feeling, again, that death is not something to fear. And there's so many authors that put it in beautiful words. William Saroyan.
Dr. Evan Alexander.
Yeah, well, see, that's his experience. But I'm talking about people writing fiction. William Saroyan finishes with a young man who's lost everything and starving to death. And the last three words in the story, it's called The Young Man on the Flying Trapeze. So he takes a trapeze to God, and he becomes dreamless, unalive, perfect again. Those three words, dreamless, unalive, perfect. And that's the end of the story. And it is so true, because there's a book called Mindsight. All these people were born blind. They had a near-death experience. What happened when they left their body? They could see again. And imagine one of them happened in the fall, which it is now. He came out of his body, saw this incredibly beautiful world. And again, he felt like I did. I don't want to not die. He was upset also when they resuscitated him. He was in an auto accident. And that, again, you don't stop and think, how can I hear? How can I think? How can I see when you're out of your body? But all
did
those
you
things
ever
go
have
on.
This conversation with your mom? And did you
no.
resuscitate yourself or you ended up in an emergency room?
No, I didn't go anywhere because I was breathing again in the bedroom after vomiting all the pieces. I mean, she came in and was mad at me, you know what I mean?
Of course.
What did you do?
Right.
But basically, she just cleaned up and on we went with life again. Because I didn't stop and say, "Ma, you have to understand what I just went through."
Right.
She wasn't exactly in the mood for that when her kid almost killed himself with this stupid, you know, behavior. And just the fact that I said, you know, who did that, that didn't get through to her because she wasn't in the room. She came in afterwards. She didn't hear me, you know, talking or describing everything.
But clearly, you saved yourself because you had a higher purpose. You had much to offer the world, so your time wasn't your time.
Yeah.
That was the kind of thing that another child could have passed.
Yeah, I really felt that it's almost that we do have angels, and I mean this. We have guided. I don't know. You know, it's hard to put into words. Spirits, consciousness, they are with us and guiding us. Well, let me tell you another time. I mean, I could have died four times. Two auto accidents where people went through stop signs and red lights and totaled my car. Before seatbelts, I even went flying out of the car into the street. And yet, there was no car to run over me. But one that was fascinating. I was working with college students, and like high school students, are totally depressed. And, you know, the high school students write 5 pages of, when I say write a suicide note for homework, write a note why you're worth loving, and you're lucky if you get a page from them. But I said to these college students, I'm putting a death certificate on every desk. I want you to fill out what you die of at what age. The only person in the room living past the age of 57 was me. I wrote on mine, working on the roof with the family yelling, you shouldn't be up there at your age doing that. And how did I die? I fell off the roof. See, I'm in my 90s. 6 months later, there's a broken branch on our roof. I put the ladder there, and I climb up on the roof. When I go to get off the top rung, this is an old wooden ladder, snapped off, and I fell all the way to the ground. What amazed me? I landed on my feet in a bit of a state of shock, believe me. So I toppled over and gave my head a good knock, a mild concussion, but nothing. I got up, no injuries, nothing. And you'd say, how the hell does that happen? Well, one night I shared this story with somebody, I mean an audience, and a man came up afterwards, and because I said, I must have an angel. There's no explaining how a top rung of a ladder, which is tilted against the house, can break, and you land out past the ladder on the pavement. And he said, you do have an angel, and I know his name. I said, really? He said, yes. What did you say when the ladder broke? I said, oh, shit. He said, that's your angel's name. And you see, you talk about fear. That man cured me of fears in many ways, too, because when things have happened to me, I'm riding a bike, it slides on the ice, I yell, oh, shit, go flying through the air. But I'm laughing when I hit the ground because of that statement. So mm-hmm. I didn't have an injury. And, you know, or you're caught in traffic and you say it. And then you relax and start laughing. And next thing you know, a cop shows up and gets everybody moving. And it's just wonderful. And then the true angel I have, if you want to really get mystical, I was doing a guided imagery in a class I was taking. I didn't believe in it. I thought it's all nonsense and crazy. You close your eyes and you make pictures. But the guy doing it was looking at me, so I closed my eyes. And being an artist, the images were marvelous and wonderful. And he said, you will take a walk along a path and you'll meet an inner guide and you'll ask him his name. So I met this fellow with a beard and strange garments on, and I said, what's your name? And he said, George. And I thought, oh, you're not Moses, Jesus, Abraham, you're George. But he's George. Then one night I'm giving a lecture and I realized I'm not giving the lecture. I'm being used, if you know what I mean. I'm putting the words out.
Someone's
a woman came up to me after the lecture and said, I've heard you before. That was better than usual. I said, I agree with you. Because I wasn't following any outlines or anything. I was just standing there talking for 2 hours. The next person came up and said, standing in front of you for the entire lecture was this man, so I drew his picture for you. And it's George.
Wow.
His garments, his beard, everything. And then a year or two later, and it's interesting, it was in the same building, both things, a lecture and then a funeral, called Mercy Center, a spiritual center. I spoke at a Christian funeral, and a healer named Olga Worrell came up to me after I spoke at the funeral. And she said, Bernie, are you Jewish? I said, why are you asking? Because I spoke at a Christian funeral? She said, no, there's a rabbi standing next to you. And it was George.
Wow.
And then I understood all his garments and everything else. And then, to top all this, I mean, how bizarre things get. You talk about dreams. I'm at Stop and Shop having fun with people, and a woman says, oh, you Dr. Siegel? I said, shh, you know, I'm acting like a kid, a little crazy. Don't call my name out. I don't want people to know who I am when I'm acting this way. Give me a new name. What do you think she called me in 2 minutes?
George. Gotcha.
Yeah, she said, okay, George. I mean, you know, those are not coincidences.
Absolutely.
And,
Bernie and George, I want to go to our studio lines. I know there's people here who want to talk to you. 860-274. Your name and where you're calling from.
Hello, how are you?
That sounds like Psychic Peter.
That is Psychic Peter. I have been listening to the show from the inception. I am excited about the program. Dr. Siegel, your stories and your experience are an inspiration to all of us. And I thank you for sharing that with the listening audience. And Joyce, thank you for your comeback. I've missed your programs. I've missed listening to your programs. And I am just so enthralled by the stories and about the experiences of these everyday people. And they are healing. And what Dr. Siegel has experienced over the years in his practice.
Yeah, what's interesting is that once people know you're not normal.
Yes.
Because a patient of mine was a mystic.
Those
came into
the
office one
the
day. And she said, now that I know you're not a normal doctor, I have a message for you from Frank. Now, Frank was a doctor friend of mine who had just died of cancer. He was in our support group. And she said, if I'd known it was this easy, I'd have bought the package a long time ago and not have resisted so much. So I called Frank's wife and I said, you know, if it doesn't upset you, here's a message from Frank. And I said it. And she went, oh, my God. I said, am I upsetting you? She said, no. Every time we'd leave your group meeting, he'd say, I can't buy the package. And I use this mystic now. When I say use her, when people have loved ones die, I say, hey, give Monica a call. She'll talk to them for you. Because she has brought me messages from my parents after they died. And she doesn't know my parents. And I didn't ask her for anything, but the phone will ring and Monica will say, your parents are together. Oh, and they're being shown around by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Now, Monica doesn't even know that I knew Elizabeth. But Elizabeth was one of the people who helped me enormously and got me interested in all these things. Because when I drew a picture for Elizabeth years ago, an outdoor scene, she said, Bernie, what are you covering up? I said, what are you talking about? She said, you put a mountain in the picture with snow on the top, but the paper is white. You don't need to use a white crayon. You added a layer. What are you covering up? And she had more questions for me, and I realized, look at all the meaning that's in this picture. You know, it's like you were saying, Joyce, about your dreams. It's not a coincidence, not an accident. So that's when I started bringing crayons to the hospital and seeing things that we were not taught in our training. I mean, Jung, God knows how many years ago, interpreted a dream and diagnosed a brain tumor in a man. I have never met a doctor or medical student who's ever been told that while in training. And I think we should be. So we should say to our patients, have you had any dreams? Well, listen to this one. We have a book called A Book of Miracles, just wonderful stories people sent in, which you have to say it's no coincidence. You don't have to use the word miracle. But you go to bed at night, a dark-skinned woman with an accent comes into your room in the dream and says you have a lump in your right breast, you need to have it evaluated. The woman woke up, went to the hospital because she felt a lump, and they diagnosed her with breast cancer. And then they said to her, your doctor will be coming in a few minutes, the one who will be taking care of you and treating you for the cancer. A few minutes later, the door opens. A dark-skinned woman doctor from India with an accent comes in, and it's the woman that was in her dream. Now, you tell me how that happens, you see.
Well, I do believe in things of that nature. I want to thank Psychic Peter for calling in and let you folks know that Psychic Peter Marks is my psychic, and he has an exclusive with this show. He's on every month, and he's very good at giving you messages from people that have passed and also talking about your present life. You can hear him on this show November 18th. So put that in, November 13th, Friday the 13th. So mark that in your book to hear Psychic Peter. And also, I want you to listen to the show. I highly recommend Dr. Bernie Siegel's show, Forget Fear and Embrace Love, in our archives on June 8th. Right now, I want you to listen to the wise words of Beverly Nadler about why you should be listening to this show every day, each and every day. And for those of you who were concerned about missing any shows while I was gone, they are all several shows, my favorite shows I handpicked. They are being downloaded for our archives. So every day we'll have a show, and we're in the process of doing that now. So here's Beverly, and then we'll come back to Dr. Siegel.
Listen to me. I have something to say about a wonderful way to start your day, a way to stimulate your mind and increase your energy, make you feel so good. And guess what? It's free. Weekdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, hear the Joyce, Barry, and Friends show. You'll find it on the internet, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is upbeat and fun and very inspirational. It's informative, educational, and very motivational. There's the Coach's Corner, great quotes and news. There are suggestions, perspectives, and advice you can use to enhance your life and improve your health, plus clever, simple ways to increase your wealth. Joyce's perceptions and personality will keep you captivated, and her guests from many walks of life will always keep you fascinated. When Joyce and her friends speak, it's like you're in the conversation. This is part of what makes her show so unique, really a sensation. For Joyce's friends are not only the guests you're listening to, they're everyone who is tuning in. Yes, I do mean you. So refer your friends and family. They'll be so pleased to know. And let's make Joyce, Barry, and Friends the number one internet radio show.
And we invite you to participate in that happening by listening to the shows in the archives, by sharing them with your friends, referring people to us that are the stature of a Bernie Siegel, although I know there's only one Bernie Siegel. I want to share, we were talking about images, people showing up in your life, whether real or imaginary, to give you messages. And this is something I'll never forget, and it happened decades back. I lived in New York at the time. I had a little Maltese puppy, about 11 pounds. I was walking the dog in the morning and got to the curb, and I'm waiting for the light to change so I could cross this big street, and there were a lot of people there. It was a busy intersection, and I'm just ready to step off the curb, and this voice says, "Look up, look up." And I look up, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I never forgot. It's as vivid today as it was at the time. It was the most beautiful angel I ever saw. It literally took up the space of the sky. It wasn't small. It was quite big and quite clear. And I kept pinching myself to see if I was hallucinating. So I kept pinching myself. The people around me were totally oblivious, crossing the street. And I just stood there as long as I could. And that image was so vivid and so clear, and it was so beautiful. Dr. Siegel, anything you want to share that you might
have
any thoughts that came up about that?
Yeah, I had a woman come into my office who'd been badly injured to take care of her. She said she was standing on a street corner one day, and she heard a voice say, "Step back, step back, step back." And she stepped back onto the sidewalk, and there a bus came zooming by that would have killed her. And so she said, "Who is this?" And said, "We are your angels." and you are going to live a long and healthy life, and we wanted to protect you. The woman then said she went and spent a fortune on plastic surgery. And if she's going to live to be 90, she'd like to look good too. And I said, well, what happened to you? She said, after all the surgery was done and I recovered, I'm out on the street and I stepped off the curb and I was hit by a truck. And I said to the angel, what the hell is going on? You told me I'd live a long, healthy life. And the angel said, you looked so good, I didn't recognize you.
Is that something someone recounted to you, or is that a joke? Because it is both funny, and I do believe in things like that as well.
No, it's a joke. But
that one's a joke.
Yeah, I think that when you get the real message, you know it's true. You know, I mean, just to share one with you, I was out the day my father said he was ready to die. I mean, he was tired of his body. We arranged a family meeting, you know, for everybody to come together, be with him when he died. And we knew who was coming because we got in touch with people all over the country and said, my father's going to die Sunday, so if you want to come, come. As I'm out in the morning, before I drove to the hospital, a voice said to me, how did your parents meet? I said, I have no idea. And the voice said, then ask your mother when you get to the hospital. When I got to the hospital, what popped out of my mouth, you know, because I thought, you're being rude. I mean, you walk into a room where your mother and your dying father are sitting and you don't give them a hug and a kiss and, you know, talk. The first words out of my mouth were, how did you two meet? My mother started telling a story how she was on vacation on a beach with girls she didn't know, and she said a bunch of boys were walking down the beach. They tossed coins. Your father lost and got me. Now, why? Because she said, I learned later the other girls had a terrible reputation, so your father lost, he got me. And my father died laughing a few hours later because of the stories my mother was telling. It was an incredibly beautiful experience. And when does he die? When the last person who said, I'm coming, walked into the hospital room and was announced, that's when he took his last breath. It was like he knew, now that everybody's here, I can say goodbye and go. But he looked so healthy and wonderful when he died, I thought he was going to change his mind. And let me say, he was in a coma. I mean, he wasn't really responding, but you hear in coma under anesthesia, you know, when you're sleeping, an alarm wakes you up, so forth. So you hear, and he was hearing all that was going on, but not speaking or participating in it, just listening and reacting. And all of it because I said, how did you two meet? And so, as I said, that's why I've learned. If the voice says, go to the animal shelter, I go and I adopt the dog. Well, I might as well tell you so you understand. I wrote a book called Buddy's Candle to help people deal with the death of a loved one of any species. There's a boy and a dog who both develop cancer, and the dog becomes the teacher to the family, enjoying the day. But it's called Buddy's Candle. I left the house with our other dog, who's called Furfy because of all his fur, and a voice said, go to the animal shelter. So I took the dog, put him in the car, and off we went. I walk in the animal shelter, and again, the voice said, what's his name? Because it was a dog sitting right by the door. Of course, what's the answer? His name is Buddy. He's been here less than, I said, well, I'm
wow.
here to take him home. And I just took him right home. And again, I didn't ask why he was there, because they told me later the people didn't like his behavior, blah, blah. But I knew I was sent to take him home, and I did. And he was a beautiful friend for a lot of years. And so when I want to adopt a dog, when our other dogs have died, I wait for the message, go to the shelter. And as a matter of fact, recently, I've always wanted a husky, a big, beautiful dog. I went down the shelter, I got a message, and sure enough, that day a husky had been brought in, and his name is my name, my Irish name, Brady, because people have Irish people I know have named one of their kids after me and named him Brady and so forth. So you look up, and the paper on the cage was Brady. I said, I'm taking him home. But he was so big and active, and we have a house full of pets, and I had to bring him back because we just couldn't handle him. He was just scaring everybody in the house. He's so big and beautiful. But I keep going back to talk to him and be friends with him until he's adopted. And then I met another little dog there next to him, and I brought that one home and named him Rags. And I'll tell you why. What we learned.
Wait, I
want
to go back to the other dog. Right. Like, you knew that it wasn't the right dog, but you still felt connected to him.
Oh, I brought him home. But, you know, you have to be practical, too, because we have a house full of cats and, you know, other pets and my wife. And he is such was such a big guy that when – and he wasn't threatening anybody, but when he ran through the house and he did things, you know, they couldn't control him. He was stronger than everybody else. And yeah, so, you know, I knew if he's in the house, the cats are going to – if I kept him in a few months, everybody would be friends. We've been through that before, but I didn't have the time now to train him. So I brought this other little fella home and named him Rags, R-A-G-S, after a beautiful poem that's by Edmund Vincent Cook, that had me in tears because this soldier's life is saved by a dog, and so are other lives by this dog named Rags. And at time of discharge, the soldier wants to adopt the dog but can't find him and assumes he's been sent home. So he goes back to medical school. That's why this touched me so. And he is in a class in medical school in which a dog is cut open on the table, and they're teaching from this cut open dog. And he walks over to look at the dog, and he realizes it's Rags. It's the dog who saved his life. And the dog licks his hand and then dies. And he says, if there's no place in heaven for an animal like that, then I'd prefer to be in hell. And that had me in tears. And that poem has always stayed with me. And I say to people, you want to read the whole poem, it's beautiful. Go on the internet, put in Rags. And I think it's Edmund Vincent Cook, C-O-O-O-K-E.
What's the name of the poem?
Rags, R-A-G-S, Rags.
Oh, Rags by Norman?
No, not Norman. I think it's Edmund Vincent Cook, C-O-O-K-E.
Oh, Edmund Vincent Cook.
Yeah.
And it's a very moving poem, you say.
Well, as a doctor, when I read that, you know, what the medical student is observing, yeah, I know. And the other thing I knew, which was fascinating, how the dog licks his hand, that I've operated on our animals. I mean, our house was a zoo. It's about a reverence for life. We were always used as a rescue place for animals by veterinarians and everybody else. And so I won't go into every creature we had, but today we would be breaking every zoning law. They didn't have zoning laws when our kids were young, so we had everything from skunks to goats and snakes and dead trees in the house for chameleons to climb in, all kinds of things. And, you know, if you grow up that way with that reverence for life, it makes such a difference, too. I forgot where I was starting from with all the pets and animals. But, you know, it just taught all the children to care about life and living. And that's something I think that is a part of me, because I mentioned to you about my Lord. Yeah, in another life, the consciousness of that life is with me, a man killed with a sword, animals and people. And I always felt that that's part of why I became a surgeon and why our house was always filled with all these rescued creatures, that I was making up for it and what I had learned from the past. It's a totally different feeling and life to do, you know, what is right, not and have the right Lord. Let's put it in a better way, that if you have the right Lord, then the things you do, the Lord you have faith in, you can trust. And you can do all the things that are asked of you. You know, I keep saying, think about Abraham. I mean, God is saying, go sacrifice your child. Not a word of disagreement or argument, or why don't you take me, leave the kid alone. Or as I sometimes think about the faith that Jesus had and what he did. I mean, he's performing miracles, so why the hell don't you jump off the cross and impress everybody?
I want to say, Bernie Siegel, it was a miracle to get you on our show today. I'm very honored and privileged. I can't wait to have you back again and continue this conversation. So I want to close out our show on a fun song that will leave you all laughing.
I was listening to Blog Talk Radio when my ears heard something that I did know. From the speakers of my laptop I heard a voice. It was the White Oprah, also known as Joyce.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH. I felt so inspired by her show, and her poetry was just so good, you know. I want to listen to Joyce again and again, as Joyce would say, if not now, when?
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Wow.
Joyce knows all about having fun.
Wow.
She's a home business wizard and she's just begun.
Wow.
She's
wow.
a coaching sensation for not just me or
wow.
you or her. It's for everyone.
Then you can MASH.
Do the Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She's a home business smash.
Then you can MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can MASH.
Do the Joyce Barry MASH.
Have a fantastic day and listen to Joyce Barry and Friends.
Folks, thanks for coming back and welcoming me back to the show after 4 months. Thank you, Bernie Siegel. You're always welcome on our show. And folks, be sure to tune in Wednesday for Dr. Evan Alexander, quite an authority on near-death experiences, as you can see in his book, Proof of Heaven, A Map of Heaven. And with Bernie Siegel, there's about 20 books. You can't go wrong with any one of them. You can only go right. God bless you all. Thank you, Bernie.
Thank you.